Subscribe to the Good Show podcast with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. This is Good Show with Ennis and Bunkus.
This one's good!
On Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Just a couple of guys wearing striped shirts. It's a good show. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Ben Ennis, JD Bunkus. Went sledding with my kid yesterday, but it's like spring again.
Yeah, oh,
it's like beautiful. 7 degrees.
Oh.
When you get locked into winter coat mode, though, you can't go back, can you? Like, I'm still wearing the big winter coat. Feels weird to wear like a lighter jacket now.
Yeah, I already told you you shouldn't wear a coat at all. You have no need for a coat. You're garage to garage. You're Kawhi Leonard. You don't experience the elements.
You literally think I should leave my house with just wearing this? Like a
I have
light
it in
little
the back
sweater.
Seat. Keep it in the back seat. Have your little emergency coat, but like wearing it up to the office seems a little strange.
Yeah.
What was the purpose?
I don't
carry
know.
Extra weight?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know what it is. But yeah, it's warm out there. We got one last sled ride in yesterday before all the snow melted.
Way to go.
It's good to see you. How was your weekend?
It was fine. Thank you very much. Spent it with some family.
Our Seahawks lost, so that hurt both of us equally.
Equally the same.
The same.
No, it
like
fine.
It's kind of tough here. I mean, Mondays are tough for anybody to start their work week, but when you and I, diehard, like long-term Seahawks fans, we suffer a loss like that. We lose our hold on first place in the division.
Ugh.
It's painful.
It really is.
Right?
It really is.
Like, how we can do this together, though.
Yeah.
You and I. Let's use this 3 hours as catharsis for ourselves.
Everyone.
You and me equally trying to get over some painful sporting losses.
The thing is that this is who the Seahawks have always been to me. Like, they have been little punching above their weight all season long. And this was the whole case for Russell Wilson MVP. Like, he had a bad game yesterday. He stunk.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if he doesn't play well, they get smoked. That's the way it goes. And they get one gift of a pick six from Jared Goff. That kind of muddies up and makes the score look somewhat respectable, but
Andre
it wasn't.
Diggs,
it was,
oh, my goodness.
Yeah, he had a terrific game, but yeah. It
what
was,
a trade.
Yeah, it was, I think they gave up a fifth or a sixth-round pick for him.
Lions, listen,
there's a reason why the Detroit Lions stay the Detroit Lions. And by the way, that guy was, I remember, you know my test of asking the other fan base or looking at the other fan base and how they react to a player leaving? That Diggs guy was, by all accounts, one of the most popular players in the locker room.
Dude, you heard the quotes from the players.
Yeah, yeah.
They're like, what
they
are we doing
went to
here?
Twitter and were pissed about it.
Yeah.
And their fans couldn't understand why, well, they still were mathematically not eliminated from the playoffs. They were giving up a starting safety for, again, like a fifth or a sixth round pick. But hey, again, as our buddy Dan Hanses says, good teams stay good, bad teams stay bad. That's the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
I just got reminded by the morning show producer, Mike Gentile, that I'm locked out of my work email because I'm an idiot.
Yeah, you're dumb.
Who waits forever to change his password. And then I forget the password and then I forget how to do things. But there's one Wi-Fi here where you don't need to change the password.
Yeah.
It's the like Sportsnet hockey boardroom.
Right.
And in there, they have tons of big screens. They all sit in there. All the honchos, you know, all the head honchos.
Yeah. Well, there's the head honchos and just the other normal honchos are there.
Head honchos and regular honchos. They're all in there together. And if you can see my computer, it's got this little thing. Like, it's just AirPlay. It says looking for TV. And I'm just always living in this.
That
I'm
your
so
screen
lazy.
Is going to show up on the TV over there?
I'm so lazy that I won't get the new Wi-Fi password, or so dumb, or some combination of those things.
No,
and yet I just live in this perpetual, every time I come into the studio, I just see this AirPlay looking for a TV screen, and live in fear of the honchos seeing everything that I'm doing on my computer.
Can I diagnose you? Because you just struggled to self-diagnose as to whether you're dumb or you're lazy. You're not either of those
Both.
Things, okay? No, you're not.
Combined.
No, you're
lazy.
First of all, you're worthwhile, okay?
Oh, thank you.
But no, you're a smart guy. And you're hardworking. You're not lazy. But in this regard, you make mistakes. You either don't think about or overrate your ability to remember things, to not lose things, like keys, wallet, pass card. I can't tell you how many times we've left this building and you're scrambling, looking for things. passwords. You know what you do? I know I can't remember those things.
Yeah.
I know I have an issue, right? Like if I don't put my keys and my wallet, my phone in the same spot every day, you're going to be gone. I'm going to just live on the street because I can't get into my home. I know, first of all, that we have to change our password every month, whatever it is. It's just insane.
You and I have all the codes.
Yeah,
and this place is keeping them all under wrap with the old adding a number to our password every
month. That's keeping the Russians from getting all of Roger's state secrets.
Yeah, no Canadian election frauds on our watch. Yeah.
Can I just give you a piece of advice?
No.
Just send yourself a little email. You have Gmail.
Yeah.
What I do is I send myself, every time I change the password, send myself an email, I open it up, and then I hit the little star, which puts it as a favorite, You know how simple that is? Every month, you know exactly what the password is.
You just gave me the same advice that I would give a grandparent. Like, here's the thing so you don't forget.
And
you
I'm just making your life better.
Yeah. When I was in university, I used to constantly accuse my roommates of hiding and stealing my stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I'd lose it all the time.
Yeah.
I'd be like, ha ha ha. Who took my keys?
No, it's
you. Good one. Oh, it's a good one. You took my keys and you hit them again. No. What a hilarious prank. And then once again, I'd have to go find them
in a jacket pocket or something and
limp out of there.
Take control. Listen, this world, this life is yours for the taking. Go out there and seize it, okay?
Yeah, I'll seize it. They used to say, they pictured me come into the apartment when I was done or come into the house at the end of the day, close my eyes and spin around and throw my crap everywhere and then start the next day with a lie.
It's so
like
bizarre.
The memento guy.
Because you're so organized in many other ways.
Yeah.
But yeah, when it comes to, I guess, things that you don't prioritize, you're like, I'll figure it out. Hasn't come back to screw me yet.
Yeah. I do like to throw my things like just on tables and I carry everything around.
You leave like your wallet in the newsroom just on a table sometimes.
Dude, that's why I have, so one of the things I think is worth spending money on is sunglasses.
Yeah.
And I have expensive sunglasses. Mm-hmm. They're not crazy or anything. They're just stock Ray-Bans, you know, the ones that every basic dude wears. Sometimes girls wear them too. They're kind of unisex. They're kind of unisex.
My wife has two pairs of Ray-Bans because she's the same as you. She thought she lost a pair and then bought another one.
But that's the thing, though, is that the way I do it is I just try to have those Ray-Bans for two summers. If I can get through two summers of not losing those sunglasses, I view it as money well spent.
See, you and I are totally different. I never spent money on sunglasses. I was given my Ray-Bans by my wife, which are,
but you just leave them in the car.
No, I'll take them out, but here's where they go. They're either in the car, they're in the car constantly, or they're into my kitchen on the counter. That's it. There's two places. That's it. You know why? Because I respect things.
Yeah, except for that's not true. I go from patio to patio in the summer. Oh, do you want to go here too? I guess so. And then eventually just get left on a patio table at a bar, and that's the way
So I've never been with you to a patio wearing sunglasses in the summer then.
No, but you do one stop.
No, here's the thing.
One beer, and then you go, I got to get home. Yeah. Oh, boy. Oh, boy, I'm in trouble.
I respect money. You just throw it away.
I gotta pick up the diapers.
What's $500 sweater there, $200 sunglasses here?
It's nothing. You just live in perpetual poverty with, like, some nice things. All right. The Raptors. You put the seed in my head, and then it became a reality, which leads to my theory that maybe this is all just a simulation, and we played out this part of it. Give me the heads up. You're like, hey, the Raptors have these three games. What are we going to talk about if the Raptors lose these three games? And I think at the time I said, well, it depends how it goes. It depends. Mm-hmm. Because to me, the result, the more and more I watch sports, the more in a long season, especially like playoffs, you don't get to be that way. This is how overreactions were born, is through playoff stuff. But in a long regular season, you really have to stay focused more on the process than the results.
Yep.
You lose a game and you play a good team tough like the Raptors did to the Clippers and you throw that one in the, well, that's just the way it goes sometimes. You play that game against the Sixers where it was kind of like the Seahawks game where some garbage, some errors by the other team allowed the score to look a little bit more favorable to you. That's when you start to flag it because this has now been, none of these games, I would say, have been impressive.
No, all three have been very similar.
And they've all shared one common denominator, which is Kyle Lowry has been back in all of these games. I think that this isn't going to be as easy as just saying, well, it's because Kyle Lowry came back, and that's why the Raptors have struggled, and that's why Siakam has been more passive, and blah, 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 blah. I think it's a bunch of different things happening all at once. But primarily, I'd like to float this theory by you, I think Siakam is tired.
Dude, I'm with you.
He just looks exhausted, and it's almost at the point where I thought tonight against Chicago, now he's got all this pressure on him to come out there and ball out after struggling yet again. Because let's be honest, Siakam was a zero in that game. Mm-hmm. Like, he ends up with the 12 points, I think, or like
18, I want to say.
But no, he could not have had that.
Yeah,
many
it was because he had a million garbage. Sorry, 16. Yeah, 16. Okay. He's 7 of 18 from the field, 0 of 4 from 3. He had 16 points, oof, but so many of those came in garbage time.
First
so
of
many
all,
chippies missed.
The
yeah,
first half.
Every three.
The first half, the only points he had was a dunk that Kyle Lowry gave him wide open under the basket.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, he ended up getting some garbage time points at the end, but he was a non-factor. He's getting blown by on defense. He's not hustling for rebounds. He just doesn't look like he has his legs. And if I was Nick Nurse, I would truly consider, and again, their sports science department knows more, and maybe he isn't exhausted, but just again, from being on the couch and looking at him and his body language and the way that he's playing, I would highly consider just being like, hey man, sit this one out. We can beat the Chicago Bulls without you. Just don't play this back-to-back. Just take a day, recuperate, figure things out, because it's a long regular season. We're going to be fine. You're going to be fine. There's also a matter of, this is kind of part of the natural regression that we were supposed to see, right?
Yeah, like, yeah. Things are not linear in any sport, right? Like, you see somebody take a step and you think, well, then the next step will come, and then the next step and the next step, and it'll all be upwards. No, when in reality, it's probably more like an escalator, like a staircase where there's plateaus and maybe some downward trends and then back up. But this is all a learning experience. It is a little bit concerning, though, when you see all of the learning happening against the good teams, right? Like, where are the outlier back to like the Siakam we've seen for most of the season against great teams? Now, he had some, like the first Boston game, he had a pretty good shooting day. In
Boston
that
and
game.
Utah are the two games that you circle and say.
Utah stinks.
I know, Utah stinks, but they're a good defensive team, and he went off against them.
Yeah.
But again, a lot of it was just garbage time, relax, soft cover. It wasn't exactly a hard press game. But either way,
weird,
I'm still
though,
giving it to him.
Right, because we're talking about, so yeah, the good teams, they defend well, and that's part of it too. But some of these are still just like wide open threes that he's made. I mean, should it matter the opponent you're playing against when you have a wide open three above the break, which he's been so much better at this season. Mm-hmm. But those are the shots he's not hitting against these good teams. But it's the level of aggression, man. Mm-hmm. And I know, listen, I don't think either you or I is going to sit here and talk about Kyle Lowry returning to this team and making it worse. Because, like, obviously that's insane. And Lowry's finally getting his shots, and he's looking like Kyle Lowry.
Well, plus Lowry is so malleable to whatever you need from him. It's one of his strongest suits, is that if he's good at sharing the basketball.
But did you listen or read the post-game quotes from this team? Like, that is part of it, mm-hmm, is reintegrating him into this offense that was clicking on all cylinders, and Fred was playing his best basketball of his entire freaking career, and the hierarchy of offensive players on this team could not have been more defined.
I think that, again, what has happened here is a lot of things all at once. Lowry comes back right as the Raptors hit a really difficult part of their schedule.
And that's the biggest part, I think.
Siakam is tired. I think he's tired from carrying the load for this long, having such a high usage rate, being asked to do so much on that team, play so many minutes, and that when Lowry came back, I wonder if there was a small part of him subconsciously that was just like, oh, I can take a bit of a breath here. Like, now there's another guy here to take some of the offensive load. Mm-hmm. And that, yeah, there's probably a little bit of hierarchy change where we don't really know. Because, yes, it does feel like it's back to Kyle Lowry is the late crunch time guy. When you need a basket, the ball should be flowing through him instead of Pascal Siakam. And that passiveness has probably settled in with Siakam a little bit, probably too much. But this isn't just a Kyle Lowry issue, because now I've been doing the thing, but this is now 10 games against good teams. And Pascal Siakam, the update is 40% from the floor, 30% from three, 7.6 rebounds per game, 3.3 assists per game, 2.5 turnovers per game, and 21.5 points. Five of those games, he's had 16 points or less.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not just a Kyle Lowry issue with Siakam. Part of it is that the uptick in competition has been harder for him to, yes, just break through as that superstar player. And I think here's what is happening here from the fan base standpoint. Siakam is good. There's no doubt about it.
Yep.
He's a good player who has exceeded expectations. He can be brilliant. He can be, at his very best, a top 10 player in the NBA. When you watch him on some given nights, when he's knocking down that three and
we've seen him be that.
Yep, we've seen him hit that level. The thing is that separates all-star and good players from great players is the consistency, is the ability to just go out there every single night and rip it up.
And the opponent doesn't matter.
Right. It becomes more of a blip that you have the bad game and we look at it and say, wow, this guy had a really off night tonight. Yes, opponent does not matter. They're the ones who just constantly, remember what we used to, and not to compare him to LeBron James, but this is just what I'm saying. With LeBron, it was always, well, you can't have one person defend him. You need to keep switching up the coverages and have him get multiple different looks. Even if your defenders are the best ones in the league, you can't just leave one person on LeBron for an entire game. Even Andre Iguodala couldn't do it. Even just the Warriors with Draymond Green couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea that Siakam gets shut down the way that he has by some individual players just shows you that, like, there's a lot of room to grow when it comes to his offense. And this is the difficulty for the fan base. People have seen the ceiling, and when we've seen the ceiling, you get excited because when he's playing that way, when all of a sudden he's dropping the 25-plus point a night where he is hitting above the break threes and he is getting out in transition and he is making those kind of stellar plays, you can dream on a title repeat. And everyone here remembers what it was like and how fun that championship run was and how it was just, we've seen the good teams that flame out in the playoffs before. And if Siakam's not great, that's what this team will be.
This is, so what we've seen during this stretch is, I think something before the season, a lot of people would have said, yeah, you're going to see that from Siakam this year, right? For sure. Like what?
I don't know. The highs have been higher than I thought they
were.
So
that's what I was going to get to. The three games is like, yeah, that's a natural progression. This guy's the number one option on this team, and he's still leading the team in field goal attempts, but he's going to have his off nights, especially against good teams. The key is what we saw earlier. And that's not, we don't throw that away, right? Like his good games, especially on that five-game road trip where they're beating the Lakers and hanging in there on the back-to-back against the Clippers. Yeah. That still happened.
He was rough against the Lakers, though.
Yeah. But by and large, over the five games, he was good.
Yeah.
Those things exist. And that's why, yeah. I mean, going into this season, you thought maybe this was just a normal average team, and it goes back to those Raptors teams led by DeMar DeRozan that were good regular season teams but ultimately had no chance come playoff time. And the only way for them to have a chance come playoff time is that guy. So much hinges, not just in this season, like when we head towards the trade deadline. Now this team is in the bottom half of playoff teams in the Eastern Conference. What Masai Ujiri decides to do with this team is so dependent on how Pascal Siakam looks this year. Projecting forward, your idea of attracting Giannis Antetokounmpo.
My idea.
Yeah, yours.
Yeah. Yeah, the one that I created.
Yeah, and what a brilliant idea it was. Yeah. So much of it hinges on Pascal Siakam, yes, looking like that top 10 player in the NBA. And we're not going to like react on a three-game sample, but yeah, maybe we are.
We are reacting right now.
Overreacting.
But yeah.
I'm not saying that he can't be that guy and that was a flash in the pan the first, whatever, 15 games of the season. And I'm not going to say that, he's garbage.
Well, yeah,
It's a process with this guy. But yeah, this is part of it, is learning to be still forceful, not too aggressive that you're boxing everybody out of the offense, but you got to look like you want the ball in your hands more to score late and tight games against good teams.
I like how in 2019, soon to be 2020, by the way, oof, dark.
Yeah, that was dark.
Yeah, too dark. That we always have to qualify things with, we're not that show who does the hot takes, you know? That's what people think. That.
Yeah, I don't know if it's the hot takes.
Yeah, just we're not going to say Pascal Siakam's garbage. Like, yeah, well, why would we? Like, what would we say he's garbage? He's obviously very good. I think that's why I think that he looks tired to me, is that there's way too many instances where he's just going to the corner and standing there. And it's like, man, Kawhi's not on this team anymore.
Yeah.
This isn't time where Kawhi takes over and you just get to stand in the corner and knock down an open three. Mm-hmm. You got to come to the ball.
Yep.
You got to do something. You have to want to have these moments and say, just like Kawhi, these are 82 practices. I need to make sure that I get as much out of these 82 practices as possible. And it's his own doing. He's been too good. He's been too good and he set the bar too high. And now everything else feels like it's almost a panic when he has, like I said, those numbers against good teams, that's a good player.
Yeah.
Like that's a, those are pretty well in line with what you would have kind of expected if I told you about the volume of Siakam's 3-point shooting. Like maybe that's a bit low, the 30%, right? I would have said he's working on his above the break three. You would have said, okay, it's a little bit low. Field goal percentage, maybe a little bit low. He's not getting his shot as well as he can. Okay, turnovers are a bit high. You'd expect that. But 21.5 a game over a 10-game sample against the league's 10 best teams that they faced, you'd be looking at that saying, that's pretty good. Those are DeMar, that's like a DeMar DeRozan type number. It's just that he needs to be a little bit better than that because we've seen he's capable of it.
He, I mean, how many times did we see Kawhi Leonard? How many times did we see good players? But I mean, Kawhi Leonard specifically, where he would pace himself, right?
Yeah.
Like even early in games, he would basically be uninvolved with the offense in the first half of games, but save it all for the second half and the fourth quarter specifically. Yeah. And that's got to be part of the learning process for Pascal.
Yeah, we'll talk a lot more Raptors today. We got Howard Beck later on the show who wrote the piece outlining the Knicks' new plan for Masai Ujiri, which I know that it sounds so eye-rolly, but Howard's one of the best, so if he writes it, we're going to talk about it.
No, there's real reporting in that.
So last thing before we move off it, though, is just that. So Van Vliet is fine enough to at least give it a go because the contusion happened in the Houston game, right? So he gave it a shot against the Sixers. They said, no, it's not happening. You're not responding well. We're going to shut it down. He's basically the stories of Kyle Lowry returning to Philly and how everyone says, well, Kyle's always going to play in Philly. That's how I feel about Fred in Chicago. Mm. Like he's got a practice facility in Rockford that has all the Fred Van Vliet logos like all over the gym. It's the Fred Van Vliet court. And he loves to play there. If he doesn't go tonight, my concern level goes up a little bit because I know that's a game he desperately wants to play in.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I thought you were talking about the team in general.
No.
They should be able to beat the Bulls without Fred VanVleet.
They should. But I'm just saying that I know this is a game that he would desperately love to play in.
Yes.
And that, yes, contusion, I've never really, like, it's like, okay, it's a bruise on his leg.
His knee.
Yeah. It's right on his knee. It makes it stiff.
Yeah, I don't know.
Contusions are always just the most confusing.
Bruise.
Yeah. Bruce.
But you would figure if it was bad enough for him to be ruled out of that game, like he left the game and he's like, he's not coming back.
Yeah, done.
That was yesterday.
Yeah. How's it getting better?
It seems unlikely.
Probably not. Probably not coming back. You would think, though, that contusion, even an injury that he played on, is not going to be a long-term one, which is, thank goodness, because I think one of the lessons we've learned from early this season is Fred VanVleet's a winner, and you feel like the Raptors are going to win when he's on the floor. Like, I just feel like he's going to come up with big shots and big plays. And I know part of it is that he did that in the finals and that he did that against the Bucks. But I genuinely just watching his game and the stories of Fred VanVleet in summer league practices and everything along the lines of what he's done with his college career, that he is just someone who he fits in those games. He plays well in those games.
Yeah. The narrative patrol is all over this thing, too. It's like they miss Kyle Lowry for double-digit games and Fred VanVleet takes total control of the offense. They look their best all season long, and then Fred leaves maybe for a couple of games. We're just on high alert to see what this team looks like with only Kyle Lowry and the exact same rotation plus a Serge Ibaka that Fred didn't even have during that span.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll just be on alert. You can win 2 seats on the Air Canada fan flight to see the Raptors in Phoenix courtesy of Air Canada. Stay tuned for Air Canada's ideal sporting destinations. Your first ideal sporting destination is Tokyo. Collect at least 5 of the destinations and then listen for your cue to call on Wednesday to officially win. Visit sportsnet.ca/590 for details. When we come back, overreactions. It's Good Show. Ben Annis, JD Bunkus, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Good Show. Good podcast. Subscribe to podcasts of Good Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. On demand. Now, back to Good Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Good Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Ben Ennis, JD Bunk. It's down to the short strokes of the NFL season.
Uh-huh.
After tonight, 3 weeks left.
This is supposed to be overreactions.
Uh-huh.
But I'm blowing that off because I'm just saying this is now proper reactions.
Yeah, I've always, you know what? I'm meaning to have this conversation with you about this segment.
We're too deep.
Because one, a lot of people do things called overreactions. But two, are they overreactions or are they just NFL takes?
No, well, now they're becoming just NFL takes. We have too much. It's like there's too much information to really have a hot take about the NFL now. Like,
yeah, it's like, is it an overreaction to say, oh, the Patriots offense stinks? It's like, no, that's like, we know.
Oh, I texted you yesterday and I tweeted it. And of course, Patriots fans, you're honestly the worst. I can't get over how terrible you are. Like, my friend John is the most insecure person I've maybe ever met when it comes to football. Like, Patriots fans love to talk about how they have six championships and Brady the GOAT and blah, 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 blah. And the second they start losing games, it's just meltdown, crybaby city.
Oh, they blew their team off the field at halftime.
It's incredible. Like, you would think that there would be some, okay, just even think about it this way. Raptors win one championship and they're in a early season type of crisis where their star player is struggling and they've lost three games. Do you know what the vast majority of fans' response has been? They won a title last year, so this year is just gravy. I'm not really going to be too upset. I trust the process. I trust it'll be fine. There's this like anger to Patriots fans, but I was texting you and I was laughing. What I tweeted was just about how Patriots have 16 points, and I know they got screwed over by the officials, but Nance and Romo in the booth, like Nance goes, there's a lot of hot takes out there this week saying the Patriots are not the same. It's like, yeah, Jim, they have 16 points at home. Yep. They scored on the first drive of the game and they haven't put up a touchdown since. Like they're just scrapping and clawing to hit the 20-point mark against a like universally accepted terrible defense at home.
Yeah. Beyond that, the team that they struggled with a week ago just got rolled over by that vaunted offense of the Denver Broncos and Drew Lock. We're putting into the Hall of Fame now.
Yeah, I know.
And maybe he's good.
Drew Lock might be good.
Is he like 30-6 good at halftime against the Houston Texans? Good. I don't know.
It's classic Houston Texans right there.
Yeah.
Like,
no,
we beat the Patriots Super Bowl. And it's like next week you down. What was it?
What are the division odds? 7? You know, the Titans play the Texans twice. Two out of the last 3 weeks of the season.
Don't tell me things. Of course I know. I'm a huge Titans fan. That's my like number two team.
I know. You're always texting me about the Titans.
I love the Titans. I love the way the Titans play football. Derrick Henry is just he's a joy to watch. And Ryan Tannehill has actually become this guy that, hey, what do you know? All the weapons that they invested in for Marcus Mariota all these years, you get a guy who's halfway competent at throwing the football down the field. Turns out A.J. Brown can play. Turns out Corey Davis can play. Like, they actually have guys who can catch the football and run with it. So
imagine Bill O'Brien finally breaks his Belichick Patriots offer, and then they miss the playoffs because the Titans are just better.
Yeah. Oh, let that be the case. Because, again, my Titans. Go Titans.
Yeah, that's still intriguing, the bottom of the AFC to me.
Yeah, the Patriots got murdered in that game, and I don't think there's really any excuse for officiating that's that terrible. The one call that I just do not accept in pro sports is the, I made that up call. Like,
The N'Keal Harry.
Yeah, I get the fumble one is awful. Again, it's like how many times we have to go through this, and you guys
like in the moment, it didn't look like he was down at all.
Yeah, that one was just dumb, but at least we've seen that dumbness before.
Yeah.
The ones I have just no time for are when the officials just make up something they didn't see. Like, I saw him step out of bounds. What? No. Both situations, you get an automatic review on either of them.
Yep.
All you need to do is let those things play out. Call both of them a touchdown. See what happens afterwards. So their fans got screwed. Their team got screwed. Of course, the Patriots being on the first end of this and other fans looking at them and saying, well, like, this is how it is for us. Finally, you understand how we feel. I get how people want to kick dirt on them for that, but I do genuinely feel bad for Patriots fans because that game, I think that game probably should have gone to overtime.
Did you see, because they did actually talk to the officials after that Patriots game.
Yeah,
they talked to them about the N'Keal Harry should have been touchdown
like something
specifically.
Blocked me and
have you seen the video?
Yeah.
There's no block.
No, I know.
It's like a direct straight line 10-foot away view of exactly where N'Keal Harry was. And it wasn't like, ooh, maybe it was closer. Like if we only had the super magnified lens, there was a good 5 inches of green between the sideline and N'Keal Harry's foot.
So the refs were bad, and officiating in NFL sucks. And it sucks across all pro sports because we ruined it with all these.
We know too much.
We know too much, and now we're all the best referee because we have every single angle and we get to react, not even in real time.
Common sense review.
I thought I had a couple of really big takeaways from this game. The first one is about the Chiefs. Chiefs really running backs is like this fungible asset, right? Like you don't really need a running back anymore and blah, 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 blah. And oh, they went out and got these young guys and Darwin Thompson, he's fast. And they got LeSean McCoy and he's the veteran. That team, when I think about what's different this year, Mahomes hasn't played as well, but they really missed that dynamic guy to the backfield that can catch passes. Mm-hmm. Like that was such a big part of their offense is just somebody who Kareem Hunt, you kind of forget that there were a lot of moments last year and the season before where we were having the debate, who's the more important offensive player for them? Is it Tyreek Hill? Is it Kareem Hunt? Who's the better athlete?
Yeah, like, in the passing game too.
Yeah, and you just see what Kareem Hunt did for the Browns the second he stepped in as a receiving back and how good he is at it and how he can line up out wide. And he's just this versatile player that gives him so much. And the Chiefs just don't have that element. They don't have the guy that you are terrified of in the screen game who can, you know, gash a defense between the tackles. They don't have a running back.
Yeah, Damian Williams is out yesterday, but he's not that guy either.
But it really felt like in that Patriots game that the only reason that they couldn't just put it away and seal it was that they didn't have a running back that they could rely on and just kind of hand off to and do checkdowns to and then open up things down the field. And that the Patriots just kind of did what they did, let their great cornerbacks play against that elite group of wide receivers, and they waited in the game and eventually kind of turned around for them because it's tough to throw on the Patriots at home in Foxborough in December.
No, and it's the one thing that you should be able to have some modicum of success against the Patriots defense is running the ball a little bit. But yeah, you got to control the ball. And look at the best teams in the NFL right now and where their running games are, man. Mm-hmm. You need to have a running game to be a dominant team in the NFL. Yeah.
And with the Patriots, the defense looked good, but there were definitely I'm coming around more and more to the idea that when we had them as the, you know, best defense in the NFL, it's not how I feel about them anymore. Like, I know it's the Chiefs, but there were too many moments in that game where it kind of felt easy, where it kind of felt, especially in the first half, like the Chiefs were just, okay, well, we got this. Like, we'll be able to scheme something up.
Well, there's
got
to be something to knowing how much is on your plate, how much of the load you have to carry for your team, because you're basically playing with no offense. Uh-huh. They are the Buffalo Bills with better branding.
Yeah. That's the thing too, though, is I actually think Tom Brady's playing fine. I really do think it's a receiver thing. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think Tom Brady is what Tom Brady used to be, where it didn't even matter who the receivers were, that he could elevate them to a different spot. Mm-hmm. But I'm not watching these games like, oh, Brady with another overthrow. Oh, Brady just missed that guy. Oh, Brady didn't go through his reads. It's just like his receivers are really bad.
I will say, like, it's different. Like, the amount of times he gets blitzed and the blitzes work, that's like, I'm not used to seeing that.
Yeah.
And part of it is, the receivers, there was the one play where, like, everybody in the world knows that the Chiefs are sending the house and the receiver runs the route instead of turning back towards him and he throws it where he should have been.
Yeah.
Like, that's, his receivers aren't on the same page at all.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Patriots fans. It feels different this year. You win the Super Bowl, everyone's going to say, well, yeah, Patriots did Patriots magic things, but I don't see it. And I'm looking at it. I'm evaluating it. They just don't feel as dangerous as they used to. You want to do Bills Ravens first or Pats Niners? Niners Saints game of the year.
Well, to me, Niners Saints, it was obviously game of the year. But, like, what questions do we have left about the Niners? Like, they can win in every single way. They can go down multiple scores, and Jimmy G looks legit now, man. Yeah. Like, remember the questions we had for him after he threw, what was it, like, 5 straight picks and an intra-squad game before the season? And he starts off slow, and they barely beat they hammered the Bengals. But they had some struggles offensively to start the year, and we wondered whether he would be good enough in games where they needed the offense to show up. I don't know. What else do we need to see? That's a good Saints defense on the road in one of the toughest buildings to play in. To do what he did to come back, and I know he got an incredible finishing play from the best tight end in the league right now to cap it. But yeah, I don't need to see anything else from the Niners.
Mm. I'm almost there. Garoppolo was incredible in that game, and I thought that the bigger achievement was that, they're down 2 touchdowns early to the Saints, and that offense just kept sprinting it out, and Garoppolo made huge throws down the field, and he was dotting it. He played great in that game. There's just no denying it. The one thing is that, that final play was like George Kittle gets out in a flat. It's supposed to be for a short pickup, and the safety covering him decides to say, I'm going to dive for his ankles and try to make a play so he doesn't pick up the first down, which I think he already had.
Yeah, he already had it.
And loses him for, a 30-plus-yard play that results in a face mask as well. So
Yeah, but there was still time left. That wasn't the last play of the game, either, right? Like,
of course
not. It was like 50 seconds left.
I'm just saying that it wasn't like Garoppolo threw a 2-yard pass that resulted in a game winner. So I
you're going to nitpick that play for Garoppolo?
Of course. What do you mean? There's no nitpicking about it. He threw a 2-yard pass to a wide open tight end.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it wasn't exactly like Aaron Rodgers-esque performance by him to finish that game. I just need to still see him in the playoffs. How does it operate in the playoffs?
Sure, yeah.
I've said all year long, I think the Niners are the best team in football. I think that right now. And the bigger thing to me, more than Garoppolo, was just that the most underrated move at the deadline was not Quandre Diggs, even though he had the two interceptions yesterday. It was getting Emmanuel Sanders. Mm-hmm. Like, what happened in that game when they go down? The first drive immediately, it's just Sanders. He's got 50 yards. He's this beautiful route runner. He's got incredible hands. He's still got the speed. He came off an Achilles tear last year.
And what is it? He's 32?
Yeah, we thought that this guy's career was over or that he was never going to be the same. And he's awesome. And if you just look at the results that the Niners have gotten out of him versus, for a second-round pick, versus what the Patriots have gotten out of Sanu, who they also played a second-round pick for. Oof. It's night and day.
Yeah.
That guy has completely shifted their offense. Like, now it's not just Kittle. They've had that Deebo Samuel guy has emerged as a legitimate pass catcher, and they've added Emmanuel Sanders. That, to me, is the thing that used to be the question is, do the Niners have the pass catchers when they were relying on Dante Pettis?
And Kendrick Bourne is like the red zone guy, too.
That's it. All of a sudden now, it feels like they have just a bunch of different weapons. They have these three running backs that you're terrified of every single one of them. Mm-hmm. Breed of the Cheetah might be my favorite nickname in all of professional sports, even though isn't Tyreek Hill also called the Cheetah? Which is kind of tough because Tyreek Hill's faster than Matt Breida. But either way, Breed of the Cheetah, even though you're not as fast, you still get that nickname because of the rhyming scheme. That's just the way it goes.
It's probably a better person.
I love the Niners. Nick Bosa is just an absolute freak. He's one of the most enjoyable players to watch in a week-in, week-out basis. Yeah, the Niners have answered a lot of questions for me. I just think they're great. I don't know how they're not going to be in the Super Bowl this year. Like, if they have home field advantage and they don't have to go down to the Superdome, I think they're going to squash Seattle in Seattle in a couple of weeks. I know that the Hawks pulled out that first game, but I don't think they're going to take them lightly. I think the Niners are a different team now. Mm-hmm. I think Seattle's a different team now with Tyler Lockett's injury. They're the best. They're the best team in the NFL. They're the most complete team. I know they lost the Ravens, but give me 10 games of Niners-Ravens, and I'm going to take the Niners to win 6 of those games.
I would say that it's a lot closer to the NFC than it is in the AFC, that the Ravens are just
superior. The Ravens are superior. So let's quickly do that. The Ravens are so good, and the Bills played such a great game. And speaking of players who I love to watch, Edmonds, the linebacker from the Buffalo Bills. Like, he was awesome in that game. The Bills linebackers did such a great job. They did a better job of any team in the NFL this year of keeping Lamar Jackson under wraps.
He got hit a couple of times.
Yeah, they were awesome. They're such a physical defense. I loved a highlight of Tre'Davious White sees the play sheet on the ground. He goes, he starts rifling through it. There's no way he could have just picked anything up, but it was just still so funny as the referee's like, give me that, Tre'Davious.
Yeah.
Like, he was cheating off the homework. But that Bills team is so good. But the same thing keeps coming back. And Bills fans, you just like Josh Allen fans, you think I'm just a hater, but I watched that game, and that's the difference. His downfield accuracy just murders the Bills' chances against elite defenses. And how many times in that game did it look like the Bills were finally about to do something, and then Josh Allen takes a crippling sack that either moves them out of field goal range or kills them on a drive where it's like right there on the 50?
Well, yeah, two fumbles, fumble. He lost one.
That's what I mean. He has these 3 weeks where he looks like he's starting to take positive steps, and then they face a good defense, and he takes the sack on the game-tying drive. He's got the third down in field goal range, and then he takes another sack where they just desperately needed a completion at the end of the first. Just downfield accuracy issues are too great for Josh Allen. Like, he's way too far off on way too many of these passes. And the one time he finally hits one, it's like Devin Singletary gets him like right there on the hands, and Singletary kind of bobbles it. But that's it. It's like, it feels like he's going to only make one of those passes per game, and he's going to miss 7 or 8 of them. And that everything ends up being dink and dunks, and you can kind of there's so much of the field that the Bills can't exploit.
No, there were at least 2 passes in the first half that were touchdowns that were just overthrown from Josh Allen.
He's
I know it was
there.
Windy, and yeah, I guess he's erring on the side of it not being a pick.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, that game was right there for the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah.
If not for Josh Allen.
It's right there, and you wonder, what does it look like with just competent quarterback play? Like, just
He's not killing them anymore?
No, he killed them in that game. Oh, that game, he murdered them.
With turnovers, he only had the one, though.
No, he murdered them that game. He took every single bad sack in that football game. He had the turnover in that game, and he missed all of his receivers downfield. Josh Allen is the only reason that the Bills lost that game. They went perfect. They slowed down the Ravens. They had the one miscue where Hayden Hurst ends up getting that long touchdown drive. Yeah, but other than that, they look like they completely swallowed up the Ravens defense. Their rushing attack was solid. Their wide receivers made some plays. What else do you want? Like, that was Josh Allen. Like, that's only on Josh Allen.
Yeah, and they were still had a chance to tie the game at the end with the last second drive.
And what happened? Josh Allen takes a sack.
Mm-hmm. All right, when we come back, we got to get into this Masai thing, how real that is. We're going to talk to Howard Beck later on in the program, but we'll do it ourselves and give you an update on who won the Cool Picks Challenge. Shouldn't be a surprise to anybody. It is Good Show. Ben Annis, J.D. Bunkus, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Missed an episode of Good Show? Listen to every episode and subscribe with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. More of Good Show with Ennis and Bunkus on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Congratulations to Robert Cholet. You're smart. You just won a $150 gift card to spend on a football jersey of your choice, courtesy of CoolBet.ca with the Cool Picks Challenge, because you took yours truly, who went 8-2 again. Be sure to go to CoolBet.ca, enter the online pool for your chance at more prizes, including a flat-screen TV and more. Visit Sportsnet.ca/590 or CoolBet.ca for details. Yeah, I was 8-2. Pretty good effort from J.D. Bunkus and Jeff Lowe, who is like leaving 500 well behind. Kind of stinks. They were both 7-3. I was 8-0 at one point yesterday. Yeah. Was monitoring history potentially for the first ever 10-0 week in the history of this contest, which has had numerous names over the years. But
this is a chalky, chalky weekend.
You're going to try and devalue my 8-2?
7-3.
Yeah.
I bet you Vegas took a bath this weekend. Probably the only thing that saved them was the Seahawks losing, because I think everyone and their brother was on the Seahawks. I'm actually embarrassed for you, and I texted this to you. But like, no, I am. I'm not even kidding. This is dead set straight face. And I talked about this with my friends, and they said the same thing. You are such a chicken. You've been red hot all year. What's your winning percentage now?
I'm 78-62, 55.7%.
Okay, exactly. And you've basically, and this honestly got dragged down by, I think one week you were something like 2-8.
Yeah.
Which really murdered your standings. But like, yeah, you are such a chicken. You've never once gone and just done, like, you don't even have to open up an online account. Just not once been like, you know what, I'm going to throw a ducat down. Or even, you know, our friend Hugh Burrell goes to Vegas like 18 times a year. You never like, Hugh, can I give you $100 to throw down on this one bet I'm feeling? Or who else did we know that went to Vegas? Our friend Ryan Favreau went to Vegas just recently. You didn't do it. You could just go to your mall and pick up a OLG ticket. You've never done it. Like, it's pretty embarrassing, man. It's pretty embarrassing that you're such a chicken that you wouldn't even throw like $10 down on a bet.
How hard? How hard were you working on coming up with a reason to make fun of me after an 8-2 week, after a dominating zero of the Cool Picks Challenge?
I think zero. I think that anyone who actually gambles, that's the thing, as I've told you before, you'll text me every week about something and I'm like, I don't care about your stakes. I genuinely, pardon I'm me, like, I'm gambling.
There's no amount of money that could give me the satisfaction, the same satisfaction I get from honestly winning the Cool Picks Challenge on a week-to-week basis.
I would buy that for like a split second if you weren't the cheapest guy I've ever met in my entire life, who's the most money conscious guy I've ever met in my entire life. Like, you are a natural born saver. You love money. Winning money, like, that's the Ben Ennis favorite thing. Yeah. And you've had this opportunity. But again, losing money, coward corner, Ben Ennis, the team captain, no chance he was ever going to do it.
Yeah, here's the thing. I don't want to mess with the streak. You know, yeah, as soon as I put a ducat down on this
coward
thing, what are you talking
Lance
about?
Lance is laughing behind the glass. All the excuses that you come up with, $10, oh, you're going to really blow it, really blow the streak. So quickly here, Howard Beck, he wrote a piece. We're going to be talking to him later in the day. And essentially, he is reporting that the New York Knicks, they're overwhelmingly fascinated with Masai Ujiri. They're going to make this
no duh.
They're going to make a run at him once again. My favorite part of the article is that teams have advised Masai privately not to do it. Like,
he needs that. He's like, should I do it? He's like, are you serious?
But I'll just say this, and we'll talk to Howard later, and we'll get his read on it. But number one, this is what happens when you have great executives. You get thrown in rumors about getting poached, right? Even in the article, it says if they can't hit on Masai Ujiri, then they're going to go try to get R.C. Buford, who ran the Spurs. Like, it's a checklist of the best in the business.
And Presti, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so you have great GMs. They're always going to be rumors. The thing about Ujiri and the elevating the platform for Giants of Africa, I know it's New York, but how famous is Masai right now? How big is his reach here in Toronto as an international city? Is it really that different from New York? I don't buy it, especially with Toronto being good and the added visibility that comes with, you know, being in the playoffs. Is that Masai Ujiri just got to hold court in front of the entire basketball universe with the Toronto Raptors? What are the odds that he's going to get the Knicks there? There's way too many holes in this pitch that all of a sudden James Dolan's going to step aside, or that all of a sudden the Knicks are going to be this well-run organization, or that there's things in the coffers that he's going to be attracted to going there. The idea that it's just added pay, MLSC is going to try to pay this guy. I think he wants to keep his options open. The scary part about this is that he has not yet signed an extension,
apparently he's turned down extensions.
Yes, exactly. Well, that's what I mean. He didn't sign an extension. Obviously, MLC has come to him with lucrative extensions and asked him to stay. Why would you ever think there's anything better? Oh, Masai, you know, we got this one championship. Let's see how you do next year. No, all the money in the world is on the table for Masai Ujiri right now. He hasn't accepted it. And it's probably because he's smart and he likes to keep his options open. The Knicks thing just feels so tired at this point. But
all those things are true. And Howard Beck is one of the most reliable NBA reporters going right now, right? And his sources say that this is not a nothing.
Right. He's not going to just leave it alone. Say, I've heard this before.
Right. But who's first of all looking at what the Knicks are doing with the David Fizdale stuff and the way that they've reacted to that from a PR perspective, GM and president aren't even speaking publicly about axing their head coach midway through the season. They're the worst team in the NBA. And I'm sure they're going to offer him total autonomy. They offered that to Phil Jackson. He was supposed to have total autonomy, from the owner. How long did that last? No, not everything, though.
Yeah, but that's what happened, is that as soon as he got there, old Phil was like, let's trade Kristaps. And they're like, okay, Phil. Yeah. Like, let's settle down, buddy.
Anyways, I mean, I can't come up with a reason why you would want to leave. Mm. We'll talk to Howard Beck later on in the program. But coming up next, we'll talk to Justin Bourne as we get into Good Show's Leafs Hour, brought to you by Drive Auto Group, fueled by customer expectations. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Subscribe to the Good Show podcast with your favorite podcatcher, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. More of Good Show with Ennis and Bunkus on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Good Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Ben Ennis, J.D. Bunkus. So, panicky times in Raptorland after all the positive emotions. Lost 3 straight against good teams. Pascal Siakam doesn't look like a top 10 MVP candidate. The last 3 games. And the architect of it all is rumored to be leaving to the New York Knicks. Let's bring in one of the best. Howard Beck of Bleacher Report in the Full 48 podcast on the line right now. He has the story. There's a common denominator in Knicks' mess, and it isn't another failed coach. It's about James Dolan, who was going to try and land Masai Ujiri. Howard, thanks for doing this. Appreciate it.
Hey, good morning, guys.
So I guess we'll start with this. We've heard about Masai to the Knicks like a million times, and every time it happens, the one thing floats around, which is Masai Ujiri on George Strombolopoulos' show up here in Canada saying, I hate the Knicks. It's like, okay, that's supposed to be the thing that we have on record as to why he's never going to go. But It feels like from the tenor of your piece that this time feels a little bit different. Is that correct?
So I look at it this differently. I don't think there's anything different now. Like, Masai Ujiri himself has not woken up one day and said, I feel differently about the potential of the Knicks than I did 5 months ago, a year ago, 3 years ago, whatever. I don't think it's that. I think that what's important here is that Masai Ujiri has, you know, done phenomenal things with Toronto, not just the championship. Like, the championship is fine. People want to say, like, oh, you know, XYZ happened. It's not that. It's the team he built. It's the organization he runs. It's the quality of that organization and the things that they do for their players, the culture and ethos that they've built, and also the things he had done previously in Denver. He is one of the top executives in the NBA. So whether it's Washington, whether it's the Knicks, whether it's anybody else, you're going to continue to hear, until he either goes or doesn't, you're going to continue to hear teams wanting to chase him, especially those in large markets with a lot of cash to throw around. It doesn't mean it's going to happen. It doesn't mean he's more open to it now than before. But I do think that having established what he has, having made it clear through his work and the results of the last few years that he is one of the top executives in the NBA, that he should be coveted, why wouldn't you want to listen? And why wouldn't you also consider, listen, I've built this organization. What if I could go save one, say the Knicks, that has seemed to be beyond repair for two decades? The allure, whether you're a coach or an executive, whether it's been Phil Jackson, whether it's Mike D'Antoni, Donnie Walsh, everybody who's come through the door at Madison Square Garden for the last 20 years, and especially the last 10 to 15, has come through with the idea that I'll be the one to fix this, and they'll put up a big statue of me in front of the garden. Like, there's an allure there. And look, Masai has a pride and an ego that's well deserved. I don't mean it in a negative way, but if he probably thinks, as many others have, if anybody could do it, I can. And if I pull it off, I'll be celebrated like a hero, like no one else has before. And that's attractive to people who are competitive. Why wouldn't it be? I'm not building the case that he's going to take it. I frankly think that there are a lot of really compelling reasons not to, and they're all very obvious. Yeah. And they were all in that column I just wrote, but to rule it out of hand because he once went on TV and said, I hate the Knicks or whatever. Like, come on. Like, that's what you say as a competitor, you know, and I've seen players and coaches and GMs and all kinds of people talk trash about it, the team, and end up playing for that team or coaching that. It happens. Like, that's just competition. So I don't put stock in any one comment.
No, for sure. And all those things you said are obviously true. And we've all just been kind of, you know, who wouldn't want Masai Ujiri? But I think we've all been waiting for, like, what are the breadcrumbs that either he would want to leave or that this has a realistic chance of happening. But you outlined a couple in your piece, and I'm interested in the actual mechanics of the thing. You wrote, Ujiri's contract is believed to run through 2021, but with an out clause under certain circumstances. Do you have, like, any, like, what does that mean? Certain circumstances, like team performance. What does that mean?
It means that if I had the details of what those outs were, I would have written them.
Yeah.
I don't mean to be a smartass, but the folks I talked to who outlined this for me basically said, I know there are outs. I don't know specifically what they are, what circumstances he can go get out under. But, you know, typically for, you know, executives and coaches in this league, anything that's a step up is usually something that is an out clause in a contract. So if you're an assistant coach and you're offered the lead assistant somewhere else, the team has to give you permission to go pursue that. If you are an executive at Masai's level, I got to think that the only way that there's a step up, and again, I don't know if this is the clause, if there's a clause of this nature, but it would be something like, it's a job with even more authority, or it's a piece of the team or something that makes it a clear step up, that could be viewed in loose terms as a promotion. Whether there are other things in terms of, you know, the Raptors not meeting certain requirements or obligations, I don't know. Sorry about the sirens. I'm going to walk the opposite direction here. But there are circumstances that would allow him to break free sooner than 2021.
Yeah, that's terrifying, because I think that if you polled most Raptors fans, most just basketball fans in this country, and you're like, what's too much to offer Masai Ujiri? They'd be like, nothing. Just whatever he wants.
But MLSE has been on record as saying he's going to get whatever he wants.
That's what I mean, is that it, and like, but I'm even talking about like power, title shifts going up, more responsibility, like all those things.
I mean, he's already the president.
Yeah, all those things would have to be, I know, but that's like Prime Minister, when he saw Trudeau that day, he's like, why can't I be you? And they're like, there's no reason why. There's no reason why, sir. Like, whatever you want. He's like, well, you want to start with mayor? Like, no. He's like, no, right to the top. They're like, you got
And look, if you were asking me my opinion, I would say, I can't see a single reason why he should leave. He's got a phenomenal organization that has backed him to the hilt, that has given him all the tools that he needs, all the resources that he needs, all the support he needs to build a fantastic organization. Not only did they win a championship, but they have, recent results notwithstanding, they've rebounded brilliantly. Players that he's in charge, that he himself brought in, have blossomed. The pride that I think you have when you see that happening in front of you, it'd be one thing if the franchise just crashed and burned after Kawhi Leonard left, and it's like, well, you know, I need greener pastures somewhere. But that's not the case. There's an entire infrastructure there that Masai built that is still, you know, we're still seeing blossom day by day, that I think he could still take great satisfaction from, in addition to all the support and resources and everything else that I mentioned before. Plus it's a phenomenal market. It's a great city. Like I'm going to avoid citing specific other teams and GMs, but there are GMs in certain cities that I think are less attractive to live in and work in that maybe would be drawn by the allure of New York, this major market. Well, New York versus Toronto is just more a matter of preference. I don't think that there's any specific advantages here that he doesn't already have in, you know, one of the biggest cities in North America already. So I don't think there's a compelling reason other than, as I said earlier, just simply the challenge of trying to salvage the Knicks where everybody else has failed. The downside, of course, is everybody who's come here leaves worse off. You know, they're like, Phil Jackson is not viewed as reverently as he was before he came here. Donnie Walsh came in and lasted a couple of years, and Dolan chased him off by meddling in basketball. Mike D'Antoni, certainly got knocked down a couple of pegs in terms of public perception after he was here, and he'd been coach of the year and was celebrated as one of the best in the NBA based on his Phoenix run. So, and it's taken him a while to kind of climb back up. So there's risk in taking over the Knicks because most people end up failing because Dolan just never does give anybody the autonomy and the latitude to do their work without interference.
Well, this is why I think Toronto people have to take that as credible, because honestly, you could replace New York with Toronto, and it's essentially the same sales pitch that everyone here has been talking about in regards to Toronto Maple Leafs for like the last few decades.
Sure.
Which is like, you come here, you win, and you're a legend forever, and it matters more. And if you think it doesn't, it's just like, I point you to the Red Sox and the Cubs, and I know it's like the same person who is the architect of those teams, but man, 100 years from now, people are going to know who Theo Epstein was, and are they going to be able to name a single other executive? Like, that stuff carries weight. It's just like, it is, it's meaningful. Like, your legacy is going to be different if you are able to elevate a moribund franchise with a massive following in a major market to a height that, you know, they haven't achieved before or haven't achieved for a really long time. The thing that I just keep coming back to is I would have difficulty being a fly. I would love to be a fly in the room and see the interaction between a guy like James Dolan and Masai Ujiri, and that at the end of it, when it comes time to putting pen to paper, Masai Ujiri accepting that would be his boss. And so do you think there is an actual situation where James Dolan, like, do we underrate maybe how maybe he can be charming in a moment, or that he can be someone who convinces people to do this? Because that's the trump card for all of us here in Toronto, is that, no, James Dolan is a buffoon, and there's just no way that a guy like Ujiri would respond to a person like him.
It's an interesting way of framing it. I'll just say this. Dolan's most compelling selling point is going to be the obvious things: the garden, the market, New York, the fan base, and the money that he can throw at him. I don't think there's anything to James Dolan himself that you're speculatively alluding to in terms of a personal sales pitch or whatever that is going to be persuasive, because I've been in a room with Jim Dolan before a few times. He's not the most eloquent man. I don't think there's any real particular charisma or charm there that is going to win over a skeptic. And that's putting it kindly. So no, he would almost need somebody else on his behalf. a trusted right-hand person. I don't even know who that would be right now, who can make the sales pitch, because that's not Dolan's strength at all.
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, history would make you raise a skeptical eyebrow if he told you you had autonomy. You could do everything. So, yeah.
I just want to say, too, that...
Oh, I would want it in writing. And, yeah. And I've heard people scoff at me saying this, but I know it's not unusual in the business world that you can get something like this. But if you could get it, what Masai Ujiri or somebody else would want from Dolan is not just a handshake agreement that I have autonomy. I want it in writing where it says, if you violate this, you're in violation of the contract, and I can walk away with the entire sum of money, no matter how many years are left, because you violated the contract. And that and it would have to be, again, I don't know exactly how you enforce something like not meddling. What does that mean exactly? How do you define that? But I would want to know that I could do all the things that Phil Jackson and others were not allowed to do, such as hire your own medical staff if you want to rebuild the medical staff. Build out a sports science department if you don't think that they have enough of that. Clean house, because basketball ops has a lot of people with the Knicks who have been there through multiple administrations. And if I'm coming in new and I've got the kind of juice that a Masai Ujiri or Sam Presti or anybody else would have, I would want it, as I say, ironclad, in writing. I get to hire all my own people, and I get to get rid of all of your people that I don't trust and don't think have been doing a particularly good job. That's a big ask, by the way, and I don't know that Dolan would ever actually grant it, and that would be among the reasons not to take it. And I would just note one other thing, because there's one line in my column that I think has gotten less notice than the ones you guys listed, which is influential people in the NBA have advised Masai strongly not to take this job, and it's because of all the things that, you know, it's all the obvious ones.
Yeah, not surprising. Howard, really enjoyed the piece, and thanks for coming on to talk about it. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Howard.
Always a pleasure, fellas. Thank you.
Howard Beck, Bleacher Report, the full 48 podcast.
And that is something that we referenced earlier in the show, right? That line?
Yeah.
But that's easier for just like anything.
Yeah.
That's easier for someone who's an executive who's not being poached by the Knicks, who's being given all the autonomy in the world, who's being told, like, this is what we're going to donate to your charities, and this is how we're going to roll out a platform for it to be more visible, and, you know, these are the controls you're going to have. Of course people are going to say, don't go work for James Dolan. I don't think that's the classic influence of a peer, you know, where you rely on someone and say, what do you think? Mm-hmm. There's probably a very, very small circle of people who Ujiri is going to trust. And ultimately, I think that it would still come down to what his next goal is, which we're not really certain of. That's the thing, right, is that we've heard rumors of things before, which is like, well, he might want a new challenge. And people in Toronto counter that with, well, isn't this a new challenge, rebuilding out of Kawhi? Mm-hmm. Well, you could say that he established the infrastructure here and that, you know, maybe it's become a bit monotonous to a guy that has gone from being a scout who slept on people's floors for basically no money to the president of the Toronto Raptors. That you shouldn't diminish or dismiss the idea out of hand that he would look for a new challenge or feel motivated by that.
No,
like,
and I don't. It's just that organization in particular, yes, is just so rotten to the core, right? It's just, and that guy in particular, and James Dolan, and I, unlike Howard, have not sat in a room with James Dolan, but I've seen plenty of interviews, and I've seen his YouTube clips of Jimmy D and the straight shots, and, you know, like, it just doesn't seem like it's a good thing that's happening there, you know, when they're firing head coaches and just releasing press releases or you know, kicking oak out of the building.
I would rather someone trash me, just go in on me publicly. Like when I asked that question, J.D. Bunkus, he's like, trash, idiot, loudmouth, everything. Just put it all out there because it makes the other person, like, but when someone does the, well, he's not the most eloquent person.
Yeah.
Which is what Howard said about Dolan. You go, ooh, that stings, because there's like, you can't find anything positive to say about the person. You think, yeah, I mean, he's not the best. And that's always comes with trying to sugarcoat it just a little bit because it's actually, like, it's the worst.
Yeah, like, he doesn't just, like, vomit all over himself. Yeah, yeah, like, you get him in a room and it's not just, like, immediate vomit.
If you've ever tried to set your friend up with another friend,
yeah,
and you start it with, he or she isn't the best looking person, that's a ugly person.
Yeah.
That's tough. That's an immediate write-off. You say, well, no thanks. Yeah. Don't even need to see the picture.
No, but you're right. But the people, the Raptors fans that are going to try and dismiss it out of hand, well, then you would say the same thing about the Maple Leafs as to why anyone would ever want to be here.
Exactly.
Right?
You can't use those same reasons for the Leafs and then not think that they're real with the Knicks.
Yeah, they are real. And I know that even in this era of player movement, the players, like the mystique of MSG, it's not there. We saw two marquee free agents who went to that market, who went to the, not even like the little brother, like the guy who's not even in the family, in the Nets, as opposed to that horrible team in the New York Knicks. But Masai Ujiri is a little bit older than Kevin Durant.
That's actually the reason why, though, I think that Ujiri is more attractive than any other executive in the NBA. Is one, I not only think that he is the best one in the NBA, but there is an allure to Masai Ujiri. Everyone, like,
yes.
When they brought in, when we discussed the not most eloquent person in the room, Masai Ujiri is the person who everyone meets and is completely blown away by. And so the Knicks are actually wanting Masai Ujiri so that they can borrow from his brand.
Yeah.
So they can borrow his credibility. Because you're not, here's what I genuinely believe, you'd never be able to convince me otherwise. If Masai Ujiri had accepted the New York Knicks front office position this past offseason, you know who are New York Knicks? Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving.
Yeah.
Like, without a doubt, without a shadow of a doubt, he gets those guys to come to New York. I think he's meeting with them and selling the Knicks and selling him being there and his culture, and it doesn't work out? You're kidding yourself. That goes down 1,000%.
And I wonder how much of this is about Giannis, too, right?
Well, I mean, a big part of it would have to be that, because the Knicks need to reclaim that image of being able to lure free agents, to be a destination point for NBA players. And right now, they simply do not have that. And you and I have talked about this with many other things, but a lot of times players don't want to be the first. Mm-hmm. And no one wants to really go to be the Knicks and try to be the guy who recruits all the other players there. It's like, you're going to want to go with other people. And it's like, if you're looking at building a group, Masai Ujiri counts as a piece in the group.
Mm-hmm. If he's going to leave, though, it's not for a lack of effort, because, like, yeah, the full court press is going to be on. It's a blank check for Masai Ujiri.
Honestly, what do you want, Masai? This good show, here, we'll offer our thing. Good show will be just 3 hours about talking about how great you are every day.
Yeah.
9 to noon. We promise it.
Yeah, as long as you come on occasionally.
How, Masai's sneaky tall, eh? He's really handsome. Very handsome guy. Very handsome, very tall.
There's nothing sneaky about his handsomeness. It's like right in your face how handsome he is.
How many pounds do you think Masai could bench?
20,000.
I was gonna say 30,000, but I guess I like Masai a little bit more. I have a greater grasp of what he's actually like.
Anyways, don't leave Masai.
Please don't.
WWE's live holiday tour hits Toronto on the 28th.
www.pleasestaymasaiujiri.com.
No.
So okay.
WWE.
All right.
And their live holiday tour hitting Toronto on the 28th. Right now, you can win a pair of tickets. If you're the fifth caller through, call us right now, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, or *590 on your cell. Find our contest rules at sportsnet.ca/590. When we come back, former NFL QB, Brock Huard. It is Good Show, Ben Ennis, J.D. Bunkus, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Good show, good podcast. Subscribe to podcasts of Good Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. More of Good Show with Ennis and Bunkus on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Aaron Schatz, great follow on Twitter about all things football.
Yeah.
Football Outsiders. directed me to this story from footballzebras.com.
Directed you, or you follow him and you saw his tweet?
That's the same thing. All what right. are you talking about? When you tweet out a link, are you not directing your followers
same like
you're towards
a big
something?
Wheel where you're like, oh, me and Shotzi, we were texting back and forth. He's talking about all the stats. No, go on.
You done? You done?
Yeah, I'm done.
Footballzebras.com, because, Hey, man, everything didn't break the right way for the Patriots. I'm so sorry for the Patriots. But, yeah, they got some bad officiating in that game against the Chiefs. Apparently worse than we even thought. There was an illegal hands-to-the-face call on our Canadian guy, Laurent Duvernay-Tardif.
Oh, okay.
That was a tough one for me. Yeah, but it was
let me handle the French next time.
It was supposed to be a 10-yard penalty. They marked it off as 5 in the game. And, like, it's not like they accidentally marked it off a different way and, like, it was, you know, it was actually 1st and 20. No, they actually had it at 1st and 15 instead of 1st and 20. That one seems like a harder pill to swallow because the other ones are kind of like judgment calls. That's just, like, straight up, like, not doing your job.
Mm-hmm.
Officials are bad. The San Francisco 49ers are quite good. Let's bring in Brock Huard, former NFL QB, host for 710 ESPN Seattle. He's on the line right now. Brock, thanks for doing this.
Good morning, man. Yes, those 49ers are pretty good. Those Ravens and 49ers in a league with a lot of parity, those two have kind of separated themselves, I think, from the rest.
Yeah, that's what it kind of felt like this week or this weekend. It was just like, okay, who are the top-tier contenders? Or who are the favorites versus who are the contenders? And there seemed like a separation point there because, yeah, it does feel like it's the Niners, the Ravens, and then you're kind of having to twist yourself to talk yourself into who would be on the same level as those two teams. But do you think that that's kind of where we're headed right now, is that Seattle is going to have this Week 16 game against San Francisco, and there might be a little bit of, hey, you know what, now these teams have really separated themselves and they've started to head in different directions?
Well, it's pretty remarkable when you look at the point differential to see where Seattle is. To be 10-3 with a plus 20, you know, we talk about run differential a lot more in baseball than we do in football with scoring differential. But, I mean, you just look at the stark contrast between the Niners and the Seahawks. It's almost tenfold, the difference in that scoring margin and that game control. You know, if this was a playoff committee in college football, we would look at strength of schedule, we look at quality wins, we would look at game control, we would look at all of those things. And yeah, I think the 49ers and the Ravens, compared to their peers, have owned it. And, you know, you kind of waited too and wondered, like, okay, I know the Seahawks have Russell Wilson, they've got some experience. I know New England's got Tom Brady. Heck, even Patrick Mahomes did this a year ago. But Jimmy Garoppolo, Lamar Jackson, the 49ers, the Ravens, can they actually do this? Can they sustain? Can they do it week after week after week against some quality competition? And, you know, San Francisco just went through that gauntlet and played in the rain in Baltimore, stayed in Florida on the East Coast time, made the trip to New Orleans. And I, for one, was like, I don't think they're experienced enough to do this and to score enough to win in that building. And they sure shut me up on both accounts and get a huge, huge win that, yes, I think sets up a Week 17 matchup that'll be awfully, awfully big in Seattle.
That's a terrific point about just the way that we probably don't take strength of schedule into account enough, because we have DVOA, and so people use that a little bit more commonly with football in terms of how we assess football teams. In fact, I think it was kind of Seattle with their first iterations of good teams with Legion of Boom that really started to push that statistic forward just about how we evaluate teams. But yeah, when you do discuss strength of schedule in the NFL, it's usually meant with, well, you can only play who's in front of you, and, well, what's a bad win in the NFL? And really, yeah, no, it's point differential and who you beat really does matter. But the one thing that was kind of the differentiator or the thing that really gave you pause as to why you wouldn't put the Niners with the Seahawks was that Seattle had Russell Wilson, who's playing at this MVP level, and Jimmy Garoppolo was wildly unproven. But after this week, mm-hmm. going to the Superdome and playing that way, do you still have reservations about who Jimmy Garoppolo is as an NFL quarterback?
Well, you know, as far as numbers go, where the starkest contrast with him is when he is in a clean pocket, man, he is good. He is smooth. He is accurate. He's as good as he is good looking when things are clean around him. It's when pressure comes and you just see it. You almost see his body just like tighten up. And you know, to me, that's where Lamar and that is where Russell and that's where Drew even getting the ball out. And those guys at the elite level, Aaron Rodgers, they almost invite that. They almost say, hey, let's go. And I remember when I played with Peyton Manning, I backed him up a couple years in Indianapolis. It got to the point where you almost wanted them, like you're daring them to bring pressure and give you a one-on-one and give you an opportunity to block it up and to change protection or to extend the play and get the ball out and hit them, you know, with a big play right back in the mouth. And he threw a touchdown late where he had to create and make something out of nothing. But by and large, to me, that's the next step for Jimmy and you know, the huge step. And if he can take that, and he can defeat pressure, and when it's not clean, continue to play at a really high level, they're going to be in the Super Bowl. You know, but that is still to be determined, and to do it on the road up in Seattle in what will be a hostile environment where hopefully the Seahawks are healthy enough to affect him like they did the first time around down in Santa Clara.
No, I can't wait for that matchup. Talk about reacting to pressure, and Tom Brady was pressured a lot yesterday by the Kansas City Chiefs. And we were singing the praises of the Texans defense a little bit, the way they limited the Patriots the week before. And I've seen some glowing things about the Chiefs after that defensive performance. But can you take anything away playing defense against the way that Patriots team is playing offense right now?
Yeah, it's strange, isn't it? Like, it's weird to watch Tom just not be able to have open receivers and put it on the money. Like, for 20 years now, we've watched it. And it's been a whole different cast of characters that have turned over all around him on his O-line, a running back, a receiver. I guess Gronk was there for a sustained period. And I think we can all agree now, based on what our eyes are seeing, our numbers are telling us, how important a piece he really was for Tom Brady to lean into, and a guy that could win one-on-one matchups and that he was comfortable throwing into tight windows. And there's nobody other than Edelman that he's comfortable doing that with. And his percentage, numbers have dropped precipitously. You've seen that. You know, when the play breaks down, he's just chucking it, right? He's not even trying to extend plays or throw into tight windows. And it is just, I'm not saying it's done. I don't want to be that fool that says this chapter's closed and finally Brady's age and everything else. But we've got enough data here over the last month plus to look at it and say, and just even the eye test with his legs and does he have enough bounce? Is there enough juice? He was never fast, but my gosh, watching him run yesterday, I felt bad for him. I'm like, oh, that hurts. It looks like it hurts to even run for Tom there late in the fourth quarter. So, yeah, they're having their issues significantly offensively. And the Chiefs defense that has been bad all season long looked a whole lot healthier yesterday.
Yeah, they did. And it's going to be an interesting matchup in a couple of weeks for the Patriots against the Buffalo Bills, maybe the division on the line. Josh Allen, I feel like we're still getting information on him and what he can be for that team. I mean, is he the type of guy that you would be afraid of facing in a playoff game in the AFC?
Well, I'll tell you what, that Dallas game, we were down in Texas. We had a doubleheader on my last weekend to call college football games. So we had Texas, Texas Tech on Friday, and then we went up to Bedlam, Oklahoma State on Saturday. And it was fun. I saw Dan Morgan, who's an assistant, I think, to the GM there in Buffalo. And Dan played in Miami and was with the Seahawks for a bunch of years and kind of similar age as me. And I've known him for a long, long time. It was just super congratulatory on his team and the way they were built. And we were on the field pregame before Bedlam. And Mike Mayock was down there, who I've known for a long time, and a bunch of NFL guys. And Mike pointed to Dan and said, man, that roster is something. Like, and if that quarterback keeps playing and keeps growing the way that he has this year, that is going to be a very dangerous team, not only this year, but for the years to come. And that Dallas game on Thanksgiving was the best I've ever seen Josh Allen play. Like, he was composed. He elevated the people around him. He was accurate. He threw into some tight windows. He was so firm with the football, and that's, I think, the biggest thing for me with a young player, and especially with him coming out of school, is there was a lot of recklessness. You wondered if he could see the field and really treasure the football the way you need to at the NFL level to be an elite guy at that position. And the coaching job there and the development of him over 2 years has been phenomenal. And he goes from a guy that I don't think I would have invested in or felt comfortable that he could take these strides to one that is taking significant steps and I think is going to beat New England in a few weeks when those two go head-to-head, as he's really learning to play the game at a really high level.
Yeah, it's tough because he does have that performance against the Cowboys that you referenced, and then this week against the Ravens, who have a better defense. They dared him to throw the ball downfield. He couldn't do it. He took a bunch of sacks when they did take away the stuff that was in the intermediate and short routes. And you think, well, yeah. It's like, and you played the position. And is that the hardest thing to learn, is the accuracy downfield? Because I can't remember a quarterback who struggled that mightily on those throws that became a Pro Bowl caliber type of player that didn't have like the Lamar Jackson level of athleticism with the feet.
Yeah, and he's got a, I mean, he has got a fastball, right? So we're talking about commanding the off-speed pitches and the touch pitches and the feathery pitches down the field and all of those things. And I think I would agree with you. You're not going to go from a 50 to 100, but can you go from a 50 to a 70 in time? And I also think a big part of this, beyond just the skill set and that accuracy and the command, honestly, I think a big part of this this season as that team has grown is both from the neck up between head coach, offensive coordinator, and quarterback, those three tied together. A defensive-minded head coach who wants to trust his defense, an offensive coordinator that knows, hey, man, if we just extend this game, this defense is so opportunistic. They have been so good this season. They're going to give us a chance to win as long as we don't make that fatal error and push the ball and create turnovers and everything else. And that's kind of that delicate line you're walking now. You're tasting some success. You're playing at a high level. You have a marquee win with some good aggressiveness, but more than anything, just timely playmaking by Josh and that crew on Thanksgiving Day. And now here comes this dance. And it's going to show up against the Patriots, right, in their offense. And you say, okay, you know, just don't make a mistake, right? Just don't make a mistake. You get this game to the fourth quarter, and let's make it happen then. And that's a dangerous line with a young quarterback that can absolutely let it rip and can fire fastballs all over the field. And to me, that, you know, that's a nice dance to be in. It's a great sports conversation, the sports talk radio conversation. It is great Sunday and Monday watching and Monday through Friday talking about, because we did it in Seattle. You know, when Russell started out in 2012, they didn't put the whole game on him. They did in New England when Tom Brady started out. They didn't put the whole game on him. They played defense. They ran the ball. But then, you know, in those marquee moments, you got to rise to the occasion. And he did on Thanksgiving Day. It didn't happen yesterday. But he will certainly get that opportunity, and that team will, against the Patriots, as you said, in a couple weeks.
Again, a super important thing to remember is that, like, Josh Allen, to become a winner, doesn't necessarily have to be Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson. And it really does feel like that is a lot of the conversation we have around first-round picks, especially guys that are taking that high, is that we genuinely look for way more the flaws and the confirmation bias rather than the successes they have. And I think that, yeah, for Allen, even it's been tough for me in the evaluations, that this season has been largely more successes than failures. Last one before we let you go. Yeah, Seahawks, it's felt a little different the last couple of weeks, and now they lose Penny to a rushing attack that felt like it was really starting to take over. And it's hard not to notice that Russell Wilson has not looked quite like the MVP-level candidate that we saw through the first, what, 8-9 games of the season, that there's been a little bit of regression here. And it happens to have coincided with, you know, Tyler Lockett being left in that game for San Francisco in San Francisco. Do you think this injury with Lockett is one where we're going to see him once again become the dominant receiver that he was becoming earlier in the season?
I sure hope so, you know, for our sake up here in Seattle, both as just a fan watching it and, you know, doing what we do with the radio and, you know, just so tied to their emotion and tied to their success. And this fan base is so passionate in that way. And for Tyler, most importantly, he's on pace to set every franchise record in receptions and yards, and his playmaking is just off the charts. He and Russell are just superhuman in some of their connection. And yeah, it's not been the same between those two. And there were a bunch of contested balls last night that you would have expected him to go up or to create some separation as he did early. And you know what else? This is the adjustments. This is what happens when you become a legit dude. This is what happens in the first half of the year when you torch this league. We talk all the time about adjustments in the game of baseball. Well, they're just as much in the game of football. They just happen a little bit slower because we get once a week to look at them, not an everyday basis. And the adjustment is keep that guy in front of you. Don't bite on the double moves. Make them throw underneath and take everything underneath. And now it's on Brian Schottenheimer and Pete and Russ out here in Seattle to make their adjustment back here down the stretch and get Lockett going. Because for this team to fire on all cylinders, they need their best offensive player. Outside of Russell Wilson, I still think that's Tyler Lockett to be what he was in the first half of the season.
Brock, this was great. Thanks so much for doing this.
That was awesome, man. Thanks.
Always a blast, man. We'll do it again, guys.
Take care.
Sounds good. Brock Heward, former NFL QB, host 710 ESPN Seattle. When we come back, odds and ends. It's a good show. Ben Ennis, J.D. Bunkus, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Missed an episode of Good Show? Listen to every episode and subscribe with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now, back to Good Show with Ennis and Bunkus on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right. It's a good show. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. It's odds and ends. Shout out to the Toronto Rock. We got off to a great start on Saturday, up 2-0, home opener against the New England Black Wolves. Kind of came apart at the seams, though, there. Lose 12-8 in their first game of the season. Like I said, it was a good start. Our boy Nick Rose played real well. It was a low-scoring affair. But, yeah, the Rock off to a little bit of a shaky start. Figure they'll bounce back nicely. Saw our pal Ashley Docking down there, too. She was doing a great job on the broadcast. Mm-hmm. So shout-out to the Toronto Rock. I had a great time. Some good pals here at the station as well. It was just a lot of fun. I'm definitely going to be heading out to more games this year.
We have so many odds and ends. This is tough. We'll do the Blue Jays tomorrow. That's fair. We'll do Lou Marsh tomorrow. That's out.
You want to do Russia? Because I kind of have a Russia thought. I mean, it's a pretty big story. What did you want to do? You wanted to do your movie?
Well, go ahead and do Russia.
Yeah, I don't know. They're like banned from the Olympics and the World Cup. Because they're doping again. I don't need to go into the specifics. You know that they cheat.
I mean, this
cheaters.
Feels like too big of a topic for odds and ends, to be honest.
Oh, not for me. I mean, do you have a big take? My only take you're a Russian person, are you, like, the athletes are still allowed to compete.
Yeah.
They just can't go.
They can't go as Russia.
Yeah. They wear the Olympic
outfits. But that's the punishment,
outfits.
Is they say to you, hey, cheater country. These are the people that are probably cheating. We put them in their special cheater outfits because they're probably cheating. Hey, who cheated? Probably the guy in the outfit that says, look out for this cheater. Like,
yeah, that's so funny. But you're already like, you know who you are. If you're Russian at this point, you're kind of like, you know, embracing the black hat, aren't you? You're like, we're the bad boys. Check out our bad boy crew.
There's a real awkward conversation about Russia and their other athletes in other sports that I don't think no one's ever really had on air. But that it's like, it's hard not when this kind of thing comes out. It's a story of this magnitude to not think about others who've been associated with their program.
Go on.
You know, in other sports like.
Go on.
The one we care about most.
What's that?
I don't know.
And who are you talking about?
Well, actually, sorry. We're a basketball country now, as we've said before. Either way. Yes. Am I surprised? No. Do I need to research more about this? Yes. Because I don't know what really about too much of the update.
They're upset that they were not allowed to participate in the investigation. Yeah. They're like, how come we can't investigate ourselves? Yeah, that was the news of the day. They're like, well, that's not fair.
Yeah.
No, like, we have some pretty good investigators in Russia.
To be fair, if I was ever in an investigation, that'd be the first question I would ask. Can I investigate this?
Yeah.
It's like when a college program gets in trouble for cheating and they go, listen, we've already taken this guy out.
Yeah.
He's suspended.
Yeah.
And the NCAA is like, we're going to suspend him more. We're going to still do more.
And shout out to David Amber for the right tweet on it as well. I mean, it was an obvious joke, but he made the correct one. He's like, because he quote tweeted the story about Russia being banned. And he said, but they still plan to participate in the 2020 U.S. election. That was amusing. Oh, good job.
Yeah, good one. Let's definitely do Chris Paul. But I'll just say this. I saw Parasite this weekend, finally. And I really liked this year in movies. I was very high on Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I really enjoyed The Irishman. I have an attention span, so I was able to appreciate it. Parasite was absolutely, without a question, by far the most entertained I've been by a film this year, and maybe in a really long time. Like, I am excited to rewatch it this weekend just because I enjoyed it so immensely that I almost feel like I kind of ruined it because I liked it too much. Like, I was gripping it too hard, and I need some time and space away to go enjoy it again. It's unbelievable. Cannot put high enough praises on that movie, Parasite. Anyways, Chris Paul thing. You like that he called
out. Tried to win the game.
Yeah, okay.
No, he did win the game.
Yeah, you know how you try to win the game? Play defense and knock down shots. You don't point out guys' uniform fouls.
You don't use the rules to your advantage. You don't know the rule book better than anybody else.
Chris Paul is one of the best point guards ever. Mm-hmm. He is arguably the best point guard of his generation.
Mm-hmm.
This is his legacy. Like, not this one incident.
Pardon me? Okay, yes. Being a dirty player.
Being a snitch, an unpopular guy, a just whiner, a crybaby. Chris Paul is on the Oklahoma City Thunder today, toiling away in the final years of his effective career because he's that guy. Because he's the guy who will point out something like that in order to win a regular season game at the expense of everything else. And there's no surprise this is already coming back to bite him in the ass. And there's no surprise that no team is going to want to free him from the prison that is Oklahoma City.
So your contention is that because he does have this encyclopedic knowledge of the rule book, he saw an infraction that would have resulted in a free throw that could have made it a two-point game that eventually they scored with 2 seconds left, throwing an inbound pass down the length of the court, and they won in overtime. So he saw this opportunity to win the game. But he should have said, you know what? It's bad for my brand to try and win this game.
You think he's the first guy? You don't think LeBron knows those rules?
Okay.
You don't think encyclopedia
LeBron? So you're
LeBron?
Saying that LeBron has chances to win basketball games or get free throws and doesn't take it?
No, because LeBron wins games the right way. This is just like you being the honestly.
I wish we had more time for this.
Yeah,
you're wrong. I'm right. No, all right. Back tomorrow. Bye.